You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Lauren Roach. We talk about how she spent a year as a digital nomad. We talk about how she made the decision to do it, why, what was the motivation, what changed in her life, what were the hard things, what were the good things, all kind of stuff like that. I love this story and I'm excited to share it with you. One of the goals that I actually have for this channel, this podcast, this platform, this container, this streaming show, I don't know, whatever lingo we're using this week for shows, one of my goals is to connect different age groups, different generations, not just so that the wiser folks with wisdom highlights and spectacles, reading glasses, can inform the youngsters of the day of the things that we know, but also as a way for people to be invigorated and inspired by people who are younger than them. I think it's helpful. I think it's fun. And I honestly think that this crossing the age group type of thing is one of the purest examples of connection and community. I think you're going to love this interview. So let's do it. Lauren Roach, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat?
Yes, let's go.
Let's do it. I start all my interviews asking the very same question. What part of the world do you call home these days?
Washington, D.C., currently.
Love it. All right. Next warm-up question. What is your favorite way to relax or shift from being busy to downtime?
Great question. I think it's going on a walk. If I have like a transition period where I take a lap, make like a fake commute because I work from home, and walk and just like be outside in nature, especially if it's a sunny, nice day, I like doing that.
I love that concept of the fake commute. I don't do exactly that, but I do have like a routine that I started years ago when I was working from home. And, you know, it's like making that adjustment. It's like, this is the end of goof off time and here's work time. Like that sort of ritual is very good. Wonderful tips. All right. Today, we're going to talk about your year-long experience as what we now today call a digital nomad. And my first question that I want to ask you about this is, how long ago was this?
This started in 2021 and ended in 2022.
Very cool. All right. So really like during lockdown.
When it was opening up.
When it was opening up. Okay.
Still like COVID, but things were opening up.
All right. Very cool. And then, so 2021 is when this started. When did the idea begin? When did you begin to think about, hey, I think I want to travel for a while?
When COVID hit. So I was working and going in person, I think 4 or 5 days a week. And then when COVID hit, we were all sent home. We thought it was going to be 2 weeks. And then it became longer and longer. And then my coworkers, I was working in Arlington or like the DC area. I had a huge team of coworkers all around my age. And rent was high in the area. Yeah. So a lot of them gave up their leases. Some of them moved to a different state permanently. Some of them moved back home. Some of them did this Airbnb hopping across the country, and I love to travel. So I saw that and I was like, wait a minute, that's really cool. I don't have to be located in DC or Virginia. So why don't I try it? But I was tied to a lease at the time. I like re-signed my lease in Arlington. So I was brainstorming. This was like in 2020. Okay, when my lease ends in 2021, how can I do this? And what buddy can I recruit to go with me? And then where am I going to go? Let's map it out.
All right. So you hit on a couple of questions that I'm going to dig a little bit deeper in, Lauren. So was there a deeper reason? Was it just that you love to travel, or was there something else going on that would like push you into like, I think I want to go explore for a year?
I like to travel. And also I was testing out areas to potentially move to longer term. So,
all right.
Yeah, my personality, I had been told, and I had this like inkling that my personality and my pace of living would fit in nice on the West Coast. And I've always been an East Coaster. I grew up in Maryland. I went to UMD College Park, and then I moved to Virginia and DC and whatnot. So I was like, okay, this is a perfect time to test that out and go for like a month or two to these different cities and then go like out West and see where I vibe and like if there's a place like outside of the East Coast that I would like to move to longer term. So I was like testing it out.
So that, okay, so that's the reason behind the reason. I love that I asked that question. Thank you so much for answering it. All right. So you see your friends, and this was a thing. So you don't have to answer this like if you don't want to, but how old were you in like 2020, 2021?
How old was I?
So 2025 minus five.
Minus five. 20, sorry, Matt. 23.
23. All right, so I love this. When because it was something that I heard about from people who were in their 20s to young 30s, people who were not tied to mortgages, people who were not tied, really a lot of recent grads. I knew somebody, a friend, longtime friend of mine, who had a recent college grad who was doing programming. And the same, he just was hopping around chasing, he was chasing like outdoor communities that he wanted to be in. So it's like, 2 months in Colorado and 2 months in Utah with, and it just sounded like such an amazing way to do that and very, very age relevant. And you were also testing out places that you might want to live longer term. Did you plan out the whole year in advance? And then did you go with somebody else? Were you by yourself or was somebody with you?
So I was with a friend. I knew that I probably wouldn't love being by myself, being like an extroverted and super social person and going to places where I didn't really know people, like if at all, or like only a couple people. So I wasn't ready to solo travel for that specific reason for that long. So I recruited a friend and a coworker at the time because our project like wasn't calling us in, so I knew that she didn't have to go into the office and was
I know
also
you don't have to be there either, so let's go.
Yeah. And she, I pitched it to a couple different people and she was down. So I was like, okay, let's go. And then we actually planned out the first 3 months. So we didn't know how long would go by until we were potentially called back into the office.
Yeah.
And they were hinting at September at one point because I was in consulting. So it was like client services. So I was like on client site previously sometimes, and we were kind of at the mercy of some clients. So we didn't really know what was up, and my lease had ended, I think, in July. I think we took off in like August, so the end of the summer of 2021. And they were had sent us emails like hinting at maybe September, keep an eye out. We might require you to come in once or twice a week. I don't know. And I was like, haha, that's funny because I just planned my next 3 months, so I won't be coming in until December at the earliest. But I did get approval, I believe, from project managers, and I did see other people on my team doing this, so I'm like, no, I wasn't the only one. So I planned like down the East Coast. We wanted to go where it was warmer. I like
Yeah.
the warm weather. So yeah, we secured places for a month each, starting like in the Virginia Beach area in for September, and then in Charlotte, North Carolina for October, and then Charleston, South Carolina for November.
Okay, so not super big distances in between. All right. What did your family and friends say when you first started talking to them about the fact that you were going to hit the road and be nomadic for a while?
I thought it was really cool. Like, my family was really cool about it because I asked if I could move. They live not far, they live in Maryland. So I asked if, when my lease was up, if I could move my stuff and store it at their house. And they were very kind and supportive, and they let me store my stuff at their house so I could pack two suitcases and live out of suitcases for a while. And I was driving my car. So they were like, yeah. And everyone knows that I love to travel. So they were like, this makes so much sense. And like, my friends were like, oh yeah, this is so Lauren, or like, this is so cool. Like, everyone I talked to about it was like, this is awesome. Like, that's so cool that you can do that.
Yeah. So nobody had any negative vibes or pushback or things that, like, oh, are you sure?
Not that I remember, no.
All right. That's awesome. I love it. One of the things, the last time I moved houses after having all of these things, I was like thinking of it as I had like three different moving car companies coming over like the course of a week. And I was remembering back to when I was in my 20s and I was like, I could move everything I owned in a car and a very small U-Haul. And that was so much easier. So I love that you were like, I'm gonna put my stuff in storage. I have somewhere to go. And I'm just gonna take my car and two suitcases. How did you, so you picked your destinations. How did you find places to stay? Were you Airbnb-ing it?
Yeah, so we actually found this website and I'm blanking on the name. But it was geared for traveling nurses.
Oh yeah.
And
It's something like travelingnurses.com or like, yeah. Travel
yeah.
nurses, yeah.
Something like that. And where like the minimum stay for a place would be 30 days, and they had places listed for 30, 60, 90 days. And
Yeah.
they advertised mainly for traveling nurses, but they said other traveling young professionals. So Airbnb, we consulted, but then man, I'm blanking on the name. I wish I remember. This site had the same listing sometimes for a lot cheaper.
Yeah, because it's longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. All right. And it's not just nurses. I always wondered about that because it comes up if you search for like long furnished rentals, like short term furnished rentals. And then the travel workers stuff comes up. That's a very cool resource. So, all right. So you were doing remote work. And so you were staying in place. How long were you going to stay? 1 month in each place?
It started out that way, but then when November rolled around and we did not get the notification that we need to go back in office, my friend and I like checked in with each other and I was like, I'm having fun, I want to continue. And she's like, I'm having fun, I want to continue. So then we started to plan a place for December, but in Florida, actually. And I forget where specifically, but we were too late. Something fell through like last minute and we didn't plan super far in advance. So we ended up both coming back to our families. They both live in Maryland. So for the holidays, for the month of December, we were back in Maryland. And then during that time, we planned the next couple of months. So, and we were going to go out west and stay a little bit longer in each place. So it was like a month and a half to 2 months in the next three cities.
Very cool. So this is something that people talk about when they are nomadic is that the effort and the time it takes to plan the moves is can be a lot. Can be a lot. Did you find that it was fun but extra work, like more stressful, less stressful than you expected? Like what was the actual work of nomading like for you guys?
It could get very stressful. There was a time where we were in our first place in Norfolk, Virginia, right outside of Virginia Beach, and the Airbnb we had secured in Charlotte for the month of October, the owner contacted us and said we can no longer stay there. He decided to sell it.
Oh.
And we were like, wait, isn't there like some like legal thing protecting us? Isn't there a law against this? So my friend's dad, luckily, is a lawyer, and so he got involved. And then my dad is a realtor, and so I was asking him questions about properties and whatnot. And my friend's dad was able to work out a deal where we didn't get the place, but we did get compensated the difference because now, like all of the Airbnbs were a lot more expensive because it was last minute.
Yeah.
So my friend and I were doing a ton of research. Like we were working a rigorous 9 to 5 and then on the side, like taking calls with realtors on Airbnb, looking up available listings, double checking our budget. Does this fit in the budget? Now everything is pricier. Like how are we gonna afford this? Where do we wanna go? Ideally Charlotte, but we might have to be flexible. So my friend's dad came in clutch and he worked out a deal where we didn't get this place, but we found another place and in Charlotte on Airbnb, and I forget what the exact difference was, but it was like a couple grand more. And so the guy, the owner of the first place, paid the difference.
Wow. Oh my gosh. That's pretty lucky. That is very lucky. So you had some support, some heavy hitter grown-up support that helped you when that was in a pinch. Yeah, I think that that would be very stressful because just like when you're traveling, if your hotel gets canceled and then you're like, I need a place to actually sleep. I do not, where am I gonna go? I want to talk about because you were working in these cities, you were there for a month to 2 months, and research is like says that relationships are a key part of happiness. So you were traveling with your one coworker friend, so you had that one contact. But how did you guys like socialize and interact with your communities when you were only going to be there for like a month or 6 weeks or 2 months? Like, how did that work for you?
That's a great question. So we didn't really interact like too much with our communities until it came to the last spot, which was Denver, Colorado, which was the friendliest city that I have ever been to. And since we were there for 2 months, I actually got to join a social kickball league, which I've done in several different cities. So we actually like made friends and had like weekly plans, social plans there. And I would say, like, I think Denver's the most conducive to making friends at the time, at least in 2022, was very transient, I think they called it. Like, there was a lot of young people moving in from the Midwest. So, like, super friendly vibe, and also a lot of new people trying to make friends. So that was super helpful. In some of the cities, I knew a couple people. So, like, in Charlotte, I had a friend from high school who I hadn't really like kept in touch with, but she saw that I was in Charlotte, and then I reached out to her and we took a dance class. We used to dance together. So we took a dance class like in the area and got together like socially, and then this happened. Like I knew two-ish people in the San Diego area. So same thing, like I would reach out if I knew a person living there who I was friendly with. I would be like, hey, like I'm living here for a month or two, like do you want to hang out and you can show me the spots, and you know I'd love to see what you're doing out here and you can like show me around. So that was really cool. Other than that, I was on the dating apps, so I did, as I was with the mindset of could I move here longer term, and
Oh, yeah.
me
Sorry, go
being
on.
a single, so me being a single, like young 20s girl at the time, I was like, oh, okay, dating is a big aspect of life. Like, I want to find a life partner. So, why don't I test it out to fully get the vibe, you know, of the city? So, I would go on dates, and that's how I met like a decent amount of people. But I wouldn't say that I was just living there for the month. So I would go on a date, and sometimes, like, you know, a couple weeks later, they'd reach out and be like, oh, do you want to go on a second date? And I'd be like, actually, I moved to Charleston. So it wasn't sustainable.
That is very all right. So that is such a great element of this. So, because all of the platforms, the dating platforms are geotagged, so you can put in your location, and so then you sort of can highlight it and find a very, that's really actually, I think, very, very smart. So that's very cool. Okay, so you're going to these places, you're enjoying the traveling, you're exploring new cities, but you're also, as you mentioned, Lauren, you said you were working a grueling 9 to 5. And so how much did you actually get to explore in these new locations, and how did you figure out what you wanted to do and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I actually got to explore a decent amount. So I'm big into work-life balance. So as much as I was working a lot, and it changed because in September I was also taking an external training course. So that was a lot of work because it was like after work I would do this online UX UI design training with a mentor, and I was working on projects. But still, even in Norfolk, I think I got to explore a decent amount, like especially weekends. So we would go, we would see what's up, like follow the local news sources or social media, or see something announced at a coffee shop. Like we're having a brewery festival this weekend, and we would go check that out. And then we'd also do some research online, and we started to make bucket lists per city. So restaurants, activities, areas like neighborhoods or bars or like zoos and stuff, like we would put on these bucket lists and we would see how much we can check off before we left.
So really intentional. All right. So very intentionally trying to explore the cities, find out what's going on, do the local things, and in addition to doing your job. That is very cool. What are some of the challenges that you guys experienced during the year? You mentioned that there was a reset over the holidays that was unexpected. You guys went home for the holidays and had to replan. What other things came up that were unexpected over the year?
Well, I think with when you were saying like relationships are key to us thriving as humans and our mental health, I agree with that. And I was realizing that it was quite isolating, and I didn't fully love being an extrovert. I didn't fully love remote work. And at one point, I remember it was optional to come back into the office. And so I was working for a huge company that had offices like all over the nation and all over the world. So I would actually locate the office in my city and go in, but I didn't know people. Like it wasn't like my coworkers or my team that was there. So oftentimes it was just like me working by myself. And I was like, damn, I feel like kind of isolated. I wish, you know, like I see maybe some of my coworkers are going in every Wednesday now and I'm not there. So I missed that. And that's like part of several reasons why I ended up moving back to DC. But yeah, with the reset was kind of nice in December because my team was having like a holiday party and like that kind of stuff is fun to be able to attend. So I'd actually switched teams a couple times. I guess there was a lot of surprises like work wise. Because I like immediately like in October I was approached by my manager of the project that my friend and I were both on, and they had lost funding. And so and I was doing UX UI design, which was deemed as a nice to have. And so these were the first like people to be cut. And she told me, and I had just started, I had switched from product management and like a scrum master role to design, and I was enjoying it. And she was like, listen, we don't have the budget for designers. We're gonna be in like a state of like I think O&M, operations and management or something. And we're not gonna be developing new features for this web application we've been working on. So you can, if you want to pursue design, I would find another project, she said, or you can do your old job, like be the scrum master product owner type role and continue on the team. So then I was like, oh, okay, I want to do design. So let me approach another manager. I had just joined this like design group within my larger organization. And I was like, hey, do you have any projects in mind that have reached out that need a designer? So she helped me find a new project basically almost immediately. So then I was doing that, and then it became a toxic team environment. It wasn't great. And the contract was originally 6 months, but I only lasted four, and that was on my own volition. After I was basically like a first year consultant, and my peers were experienced managers. So I was working way above my pay grade and I was way outside of my comfort zone, and I had just became a designer and I all of a sudden was the design lead for a team and the only designer and like navigating all of these things. I wasn't set up like for success. So I was really stressed. So actually that period from like I guess end of October through January or February maybe, was really stressful work wise. I still made sure to explore. I'm not going to take for granted that I'm nomading and in these fun cities. But then I went to my coach. So I had like this coach mentor person who I became friends with, a previous manager, and I was like, get me out of here. Like I'm not thriving. I'm not having fun, straight up not having a good time. Like let me find a new team. How can I find a new team? So that was interesting because and then like butt heads with some people on the team. So it didn't end really well, but I was able with help to find a new gig. And in that time I was in Austin, Texas. So I transitioned jobs or like projects, I guess, at this larger company 3 times when I was nomading, which was a lot.
That is interesting. Okay, so a lot of like workplace stress. One of the things that I was thinking about when I was putting together the questions of this is that there is anytime you change locations or time zones and you're, trying to, because even if you're not like a nomadic person now, like all the jobs that everybody has, there's less definition between like work time and non-work time, and so people will take calls and do things like that. But there's pressure and stress anytime, even if you're in a hotel or an Airbnb, you're in a new place and you're setting your things up and you're getting ready to do like work in a different place. What was that like for you, like changing locations, knowing that you had to set up for like, reliable work, for 4 to 6 or 4 weeks, 6 weeks? 2 months, like, was it challenging or was it just like, yeah, I'm here, here's my desk, here I go?
I think I was more so go with the flow. Like, here's my desk. Like, we had pretty much like a decent amount of space. We were doing like either 2-bedroom 1-bath or 2-bedroom 2-bath places. And I like mixing up my work environment makes things more interesting. And
Yeah.
so I would, and I am a person that gets easily bored sometimes. So like working from home, it could become mundane. But then next month, I was in a new place. And like in Charleston, we had this really cute wraparound porch.
Okay.
And there were some chairs and tables out there. So I could work from that area. And I could also work from local cafes. Like I used it as a way to explore the city too. So I would go
Okay.
like work from a coffee shop or something while exploring the city that I was in. So that actually like worked out really well. So it wasn't bad.
You never had a place where you like checked in and you're like, okay, the Wi-Fi here sucks. I can't like do anything.
I remember the Wi-Fi sucking in some places, but I don't think it was the homes that we were living in. I think it was like different areas or coffee shops.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's reasonable. Yeah. Because I think about it, it's like every once in a while, you know, you're in a hotel and you're like supposed to do like log into something, even if it's like nothing. And sometimes you're just like, oh my gosh, this is not as good as it is what I'm used to. Like it can just be stressful. So that's where that question came from. Okay, so what were some of the great memories that you racked up over the year of traveling and living nomadically? What were some things that really made it worthwhile?
I think I was living my best life. Like
Yeah.
I was living life to the fullest. I think I was doing more socially on the weekdays too, 'cause previously my weekdays, especially when I was going into the office, like everything would be set in stone and I wouldn't really have social plans. So it was like, you know, get up, get ready for work, go to work, have the work day, come back, work out, make dinner, shower.
Go to
And
bed,
then time for bed and do it all over. Well, actually, just going remote gave me more time back. So I had switched my routine. I started working out in the mornings, and then I would do work, and then it would end sometimes at like different times at the end of the day. But roughly, I mean, it was like 9 to 5. And then if we were in a different time zone, I would try to adhere to the Eastern time. So like in San Diego, which was 3 hours behind, it was 6 to 2 roughly. So it was rough in the mornings, but in the afternoons, it was like we had a whole day.
Oh my gosh. When I moved to Miami and like before I got like a real job, I worked at a coffee shop and it was 6 to 3. And I tell people all the time, I'm an early bird, so it's like fine. But I was like, it was spectacular because you had like an entire afternoon and then an evening. You know, it was like, it's like if you can get up, then you have like a whole afternoon to like goof off.
Yeah, I had so much time during the weekdays. Like, we could go to trivia, we could go to happy hours, we could go to the beach. Like, we lived a mile from the beach, and I love the beach, and I do really like surfing. So, and that's huge in San Diego. So, we would go to the beach, like, I'd see people surfing. And I honestly, the way of life was really different there. The beach was like crowded at like 3 p.m. on a Wednesday or whatever. And I was like, are we all working East Coast hours, or is this just like how people operate here?
So you mentioned that you were trying out, that you were thinking that you would really like the West Coast vibe. How long were you, how, so you waited all the way to San Diego. Is that the only spot all the way west that you went, or how far west did you go?
San Diego was the furthest west. The other three cities, like after we did the down the East Coast, we did Austin, Texas, San Diego, and Denver, Colorado, and then it was over.
And then it was over. All right. So was your goal when you set it out? You set out 3 months and you came back and you retooled. Was the goal to be a year? Like, was that the plan? We're going to go for a year and then wrap it up? Or what brought it to a close?
I don't think we were as concerned about time. It was more so like, okay, we like at the end of 2021, we weren't being called back into the office. So it's like, awesome. We have more time than we potentially planned for this adventure. And we're both enjoying it. And we both want to see other cities. So, like, what are the other cities we want to get to? San
Okay.
Diego, high on my list. So we kind of picked one in between that it seems like a lot of people in their 20s were loving, Austin. So we drove there and then did that for a little bit, then drove to San Diego. And then Denver was also high, maybe on both of our lists. I love Colorado. But we did that, and then that's like all we had planned. I think it just like worked out with like, okay, that's what we had planned, and we hadn't really planned past that. So it was
Okay.
like the end.
It was like, now it's time to go home. We're finished with this. All right. Very cool. Okay. So the next question is absolutely a mom question. I'm older than you and I get to ask these things. So, did you guys get sick while you were out on the road and how did you handle it?
Funnily enough, yes, I got COVID in the break. When we took a break in December, and it's for half of January too, I think because of all of these holiday parties and seeing all of
Probably,
these
yeah.
some people, I got COVID. Oh, and then I also went to Atlanta for New Year's. I was actually like Inception traveling, so this is like crazy. One of my best friends lived in Atlanta at the time, and I spend New Year's with the same group of girls like every year. So instead of her coming to the DMV area, we all planned a trip to Atlanta to spend
Okay.
there. So when I was home, December and half of January, I went there. All of that travel and seeing people after I got back after New Year's, I got COVID. And this was right before we left for the Austin place. And luckily it worked out where it was like the 2 weeks quarantine was up just before we had planned to leave, and we were going to stop at Nashville on the way and spend a couple days there. So that worked out, and my parents were really kind about it because I was living in their house and they weren't happy that obviously I got COVID, but I was quarantining in my room and they would make me meals and like bring it up, and they were really, really kind about it. And then when we got on the road and we were in Nashville, my friend ended up getting COVID. So she got sick in Nashville,
Oof.
like really sick. And then we had a 12-hour drive to Austin. And originally we were like switching off driving, but I could tell she was like not feeling well. So we did switch off, but then I think I drove like a decent chunk to Austin. And when we got there, I think she took a test. She realized it was COVID. So I was kind of annoyed because I just had COVID and I was like, I just quarantined. And now we
Yeah.
get to Austin and I'm like, well, because I was exposed, does that mean I have to quarantine? Like, what is this? This is like another 2 weeks. And we had a coworker in Austin, actually on our team, who had reached out and offered to have us over for dinner right when we got there. So it impacted like a couple plans, but not too many. It was like that plan, I was like, sorry. She has
Yeah.
COVID. I feel bad. I'm exposed. I don't want to expose you guys. So we kind of kept to ourselves the first chunk of the Austin trip. But then, she got better and we were able to go to do stuff.
Very cool. And you didn't have to like find doctors or deal with any of that while you were on the road for a year.
Not that I remember. I did have to find a dentist, though, in Denver, and I actually really liked that dentist. It was like my tooth was hurting. I had like some weird tooth pain and I was like, oh shoot, I don't have a dentist out here. Like, let me go do some research. And that was a very interesting thing, not on my bingo card for the year.
Right, because that's what one of the things that, it's like, your plan is you're going to live, you're going to work, you're going to explore, and then when these things come up that are not, what you're wishing for, that's like one side of it. But the other thing is you're separated from your normal places. It's like, okay, well, my dentist is in a different state, so what am I going to do? So you had to find a local dentist and do all of those things. That is absolutely what I was curious about. All right, so you had some definite support this year. You still had parents at home; they were helping you store. You had a roommate that was traveling with you, sharing some of the responsibilities and splitting the budget, and there as support as you explored. So, did you have any other support that helped you make this trip? You had a job; it was like financing, so that's also support. Your friends were supportive; all of those things. Any other support that you had making this year happen, or any support that you wish you had had that you didn't have?
A great question. This isn't like additional support because it involves my dad, but he actually surprised me for my birthday and flew out to San Diego.
I think that's huge support. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's the same person that you
Yeah.
mentioned, but a
Yeah.
different type of support that I hadn't brought up. So that was cool when he stayed for a couple days, I think, in San Diego, because we were there for my birthday. So that was really cool to have him there when I hadn't like seen him in a little while. In terms of other support, though, I mean, whoever I met up with, like friends in the city that I was living with, were hugely supportive. Like, they would give me recommendations and they would take me to do things or introduce me to local events or like the dance class, for example. Like, I've been a dancer my whole life and that's an activity I like to do. So, testing that out in different cities was really cool. And I was glad that I had a friend from my high school dancing that lived in Charlotte who like knew of a studio and knew their class schedule and was like, oh, we could go to this. So I probably wouldn't have known about it unless she told me.
I think that that's really an excellent way to do that. Now, were you these were people you knew and you were just in contact with, or were you using and you were using the geotagging and the dating apps, but how did you just know that people you were in enough contact with these friends that you knew, hey, so and so lives in Charlotte and so lives in San Diego? Or was it like you were searching through like, geotagging on your social apps?
No, the first part, of
You just
course.
knew that they were there. All right, very cool. What skills and lessons, Lauren, did you pick up, you think, in this year of traveling and trying new things and getting out of your comfort zone and being a nomad? What lessons and skills did you pick up that you are still using and applying to your life today, your concept of your future self? Like what are the long-term impacts of this decision to spend a year on the road?
That's a great question. I highly recommend everyone does it. I built so much resilience with the things that like weren't on my bingo card or went sideways or went wrong, and having to be on our toes, moving around a month or two at a time, securing different places. Like, I built a lot of knowledge around like the Airbnb and this other site platform. So like a little bit of, I guess, real estate rental knowledge in
Sure,
terms
sure.
of. And then in terms of like dealing with stuff that comes up that you're not expecting because you're still living everyday life, and then all the career transitions I was going to through as well, built a lot of resilience. I think like I'm definitely still using that day in and day out. I also like I struggle mentally, or I have struggled mentally a lot with big life transitions, as I think a lot of people do.
I was going to
And
say, introduce me to someone who doesn't like.
yeah, so that was actually really funny because I put myself in a position of big life transitions like once a month, and I was like surprised with myself. I don't know if other people also express like similar surprise with me, like, whoa, how are you doing this and like staying sane? I remember I definitely had my fair share of mental health challenges. There were ups and downs, and at the time, I'm very lucky because my employer had this integrated mental health services thing for their employees. And so they would pair you with a therapist and give you 8 free sessions a year. So I actually was paired with someone when I was like down bad at the beginning of 2022. I was paired with a psychologist and I had these therapy sessions, which were really helpful in managing my mental health. During all of the travel in 2022. So I definitely built up, like, in addition to resilience, just like, I guess mental stamina or just like
Yeah,
mental.
mental strength, independence. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, it is moving is considered one of the biggest stresses we can put on ourselves, but it is like anything else, right? Like confidence comes from competence. So the more we do things, the more we're used to those various things, you build up a skill set that makes it more manageable. And then often those skills translate to other places when we're not expecting it to. And I love that you were given you not only that your employer made the resources available, but I love that you took advantage of those resources that were offered to you when you were struggling, and also that you shared that, because those are three different pieces of a puzzle that have to come together for it to make a difference, right? So I'm older than you, but when I was working in corporate, it was really pretty common for people to not accept resources that were offered by their boss because they were afraid that there would be ramifications to their employment, right? And I think that that has hopefully shifted for the people who are working in offices these days, because It's terrific. It's really, really terrific. And it's also an enormous generational change to be able to talk about it as a supportive thing. Like, this is how I worked through this problem, so that other people are aware that other people are doing it and they can do it too. Very, very good stuff. Totally calling it out. All right. So, in a second, we're going to do the final questions. I have loved learning this story. I think it's a spectacular example of making the most of a situation in an unexpected way. It's absolutely a generational thing that people who are much older than you would not even consider the possibility of, like, oh, I don't actually have to be here. I'll just take it on the road. You guys, you deserve credit for that. Everybody deserves credit for that. I was listening to a podcast today where there were people my age, Gen Xers. It was a Gen X podcast, and they were slamming the younger generations. And it just rubbed me entirely the wrong way, because I was like, you know what? I didn't like it when I was in my 20s. And like, old people were like, well, your generation is totally, not going to do anything. And I thought that felt like absolute crap. And I have a lot of faith and confidence in the younger generation. And this is one of the things, one of the changes and shifts that people who are working younger than I am have done, that I just think is amazing. And I love it. I absolutely love it. All right. So I want to give you a chance to talk about what you do today and your podcast directly to the audience. So tell us what you do and tell us about your show.
Yeah, thank you for the space. So, speaking of mental health, that is the whole mission of my wellness brand, The Naked Truth with Lauren. So, The Naked Truth with Lauren is an omni-channel wellness brand. It is transforming the way we approach mental health, mindfulness, and manifestation. While it is different in this generation, and people are more open about it, and people are more apt to take advantage of the resources for their mental health that are either offered by employers or just like therapy in general, there is still a long way to go. I'm very appreciative of the progress that has been made since like my parents' generation, but there's still a long way to go. So I've been journaling a lot. I've had my ups and downs with mental health since 2019, my senior year of college. I've been in and out of therapy the past like 6 years, and I've just found my purpose in life is to help destigmatize mental health on a society level and use like my vulnerability as my superpower and then create genuine a supportive community that combats the loneliness epidemic, because during the pandemic it was the worst. But we are still coming out of like what they're calling a loneliness epidemic, and especially like in America, in this like individualistic society that we live in, which has pros and cons, it's not all bad. In this era of technology, in this era of living maybe further apart from each other, so we don't see our friends and loved ones as often as we could, it's just no one wants to be alone. And when you feel alone in your struggles mentally, like I have in the past, like people have, because it's not openly talked about all the time, that's when like at an extreme, someone could make a life-ending decision. And
They internalize the struggle.
yes, and I am very aware that suicide is one of the leading causes of death in the US. And so I aim to decrease the rates, like help decrease the rates, because it's not only me doing the work. But yeah, with my wellness brand as a whole, so there's the podcast, which you mentioned. It's on all platforms, The Naked Truth with Lauren. It's conversations, raw, open conversations about my experiences, friends and families, journeys and experiences, experts. We've had transformational success coaches. We've had self-sabotage experts. I just had a EDM DJ who talks about manifestation and incorporates that in her music. I interviewed an American Ninja Warrior about the link between like physical and mental health. So all of that, those you can find on all your favorite platforms. We have an Instagram, so I do like digital content creation. The Instagram is the primary platform. It's at thenakedtruth.pod. And it's just like fun, inspiring, motivational content. I have a weekly gratitude newsletter to help us attract abundance on a community level. So practicing, taking my gratitude practice, putting it into a weekly newsletter, and practicing gratitude helps shift the human negativity bias to focus on the positive and then attract more positive and abundance into your life. So that's the goal there. I also do one-on-one transformation coaching myself, And I do interactive workshops both in person and virtually. And the best place to find all of this stuff, because I know it's a lot, is our website, which is www.thenakedtruthwithlauren.com. So if people want to check out any of my services, you can go there. If you want to join the email list, get the gratitude newsletter, and hear about future events and workshops, you can sign up for the newsletter on my website.
I love it. And I will put the link to Lauren's website and her podcast in the show notes, which will be on all the audio first platforms and on YouTube. But the easiest way to get the links, as Lauren alluded to on her platform as well, is to be a subscriber to the Imperfect Adulting email community. And then I recap that for all the episodes, and the links are right there in your email, and you just click on them, and it's easy peasy, lemon squeezy. Thank you so much, Lauren, for sharing all that information with us. Are you ready for the final three questions?
Yeah, let's go.
Let's do it. All right. What is your favorite color?
This.
So, how
if
would you
people.
describe that? Like gray, like heatherish gray, or
No, actually, okay, so if people are watching, it's like aqua. That's
aqua? All right. So, like an aqua. She's got an aqua hoodie on, and that is the way it goes. Okay. Today in 2025, when you have a question, any kind of question, what do? Are you going to ask a chatbot? Do you call a friend? Do you go to a library and ask a librarian? Do you head to YouTube, Google, or something else completely?
probably AI. I don't know
Yeah.
if they're gonna like this answer, but
No, I think that's what I think that's what a lot of people are doing, and that's the reason I ask. And it's, you know, it's and how many different AI, this question 2.1, it's not its own question, there's still another one coming. How many AI platforms do you like have in your like rotation of tools?
probably like four or five. I literally have a folder on my phone. I'm looking at it now called AI Assistance. Originally, I just started with ChatGPT, like a lot of people do. Then I was using Claude. I use Claude actually daily. I do like a
Yeah.
more pages style voice journaling with Claude, and it's good for writing. So I use it for the first draft of emails and my LinkedIn bio, stuff like that. Obviously, I tweak with my own like language
Yeah.
and word. Yeah, the human in the loop is crucial with AI. I use
I'm
Gemini.
very pro. I'm pro AI, so you don't have to couch it for me. Like, I'm a big fan. So, all right,
Yeah, but just like
Gemini. Yeah.
Telling everyone out there, because some people are misinformed, I think, or have preconceived notions about AI. And so it's not going to replace us. We need the humans, though. They're still training the models and there's still hallucinations and it makes mistakes. So that's just my point. But I use Gemini as well. I've used Perplexity here and there and Notebook LM. And I do want to say this out loud because I don't know if a lot of people know about it. There's an app called Diem. Well, it's a Gen AI tool, but it's made by a woman for women. And I don't know how I originally found it, but this woman is on TikTok. It might have scrolled across my TikTok. And her whole point in making it was like a lot of white male billionaires
That's right.
own the top digital platforms and AI tools that we are using. And so she wants the power in the hands of women and all about like equality, gender equality. So it's kind of like it's very niche. It's not as broad as like a ChatGPT. It's more so like questions for the group chat that you might be embarrassed about asking out loud, or maybe taboo topics like sex or like drugs that you want like a forum. There's like a community forum. And then there's a Gen AI tool, and then it quotes the sources, you know, where it's getting the
Wow,
information.
and what is it called again?
DIEM.
Okay, like carpe diem, like so for the day, seize the day. Okay, so I had not heard of that, and I think that's a very cool thing, because very similarly to the way, you know, our medical choices are impacted by the fact that 200 years of medical research just didn't include women. I don't know why that would matter to anybody, but you know, it does actually show up in the choices we get. It makes sense that the technology choices are predominantly male-owned and male-controlled. So are the broadcast choices. News and entertainment is also heavily factored by companies that are owned and managed by men, and that's another place where it is good that there are women taking leadership roles. All right, last question. If you won the lottery today, and I checked when I wrote out these questions, it is $950 million for Powerball. So you can put that number in your mind. What is the first thing you would buy? There's only one rule. It has to actually be for you.
It has to be a thing, not an experience.
No, it could be an experience. No. Yeah. It just has to be for you, not for somebody else.
I'm an experience girl. I love experience gifts. So I think I would buy myself a trip. Honestly,
All
yeah.
right, so and if
I
you had
think I would.
$950 million, what's the expensive trip that's out there that you're like, I would really love to do this, but the way to do this is really expensive?
I would send myself to the other side of the world, Australia and New Zealand, because
Nice,
I
nice.
want to go. And I think you have to go for at least 2+ weeks, a good chunk of time to make that long haul flight worth it.
I totally agree. When you go to Sydney, are you going to walk across the bridge? You're going to go across, you know how you can walk? Do you know that? You can get they, oh, you don't know this. All right. In Sydney, there's the channel, I think it's the Harbour Bridge. And there you can, as a tourism thing, they put you on like a security line. You can walk across the top.
Cool.
Put it on
Yeah.
your list. Put it on your list, Lauren. All right. Thank you so much, Lauren. You have been an amazing guest today on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself. Head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.